Germany's new coalition was meant to be a fresh start, a team that would put an end to the infighting of the last government and focus on just getting things done. Well, that was the idea. Now infighting is very much back. After the nomination of new judges to Germany's equivalent of the US Supreme Court exploded into this toxic mix of culture wars, political procedure gone wrong, and even claims of death threats against one of the central players. Well, we're going to break it all down on this edition of Berlin Briefing and ask if this is a blip or a real crisis, an omen that this government of conservatives and the centre-left will struggle to reconcile its own contradictions. We've got Michaela and Nina here in the studio, and in a Berlin Briefing debut, we are joined by some serious legal expertise in the form of law professor Markus Kotzur from the University of Hamburg. Markus, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for the invitation.
So let's get started. And first of all, I want to set the scene because this is a complicated story, but it's also a really explosive one. So Nina, set the scene. This all blew up in the final session of Parliament before the summer break. Tell us, like, what happened?
Absolutely. The last week of Parliament was packed with votes that the coalition government had organised, and among those was one crucial vote on the three judges that were going to become new members of the Constitutional Court in Karlsruhe. And everybody thought that this was standard procedure. You know, there had been a previous vote in a smaller committee to sort of test whether the majorities were there, and all three candidates in that committee went through. And so on Friday morning, then suddenly it emerged, oh no, some conservatives are having second thoughts. Suddenly there were accusations of plagiarism, and the conservatives got cold feet and pulled the vote, triggering a huge debate here, and we'll get into all the details, I'm sure, but this is all the country is talking about now.
So we'll get into what exactly the reasons for that sort of cold feet on the conservative side was. You mentioned accusations of plagiarism against one of these candidates. There's also a lot of kind of culture war stuff in there. But Markus, I just want to come to you at this stage. And so you're the law professor, you're the expert on all this. How unusual is this? And what is the usual process for picking judges for the Constitutional Court, so the equivalent of the Supreme Court in Germany?
Yeah, it is unusual to some extent, but not that unusual. And I remember, you know, years ago we had, and by the way, also on a debate about the interpretation of Article 1 of the Constitution, a situation when a judge that was
so
nominated...
Can I just stop you there, Markus? So what is Article 1 of the Constitution then? So what
that
was this debate
about?
That is
the article that guarantees human dignity. That's our human dignity clause in the Constitution, and the opening of our fundamental rights section in the Constitution. And we had a debate which... It was different from today's debate, but it reminds me very well of what's going on now. We had a debate on a judge, a colleague from Hamburg, who is teaching at Würzburg University, Horst Dreyer. He was suggested to become the new president of the court. And then there was kind of, you know, concerns by the conservatives that his interpretation of the human dignity clause would not fulfill the standards. And then he did not get elected. And we had Professor Voskuhle becoming the president, and he did an excellent job. So this is not usual, but it's not, you know, the big crisis that never has been there before.
So political, just to interrupt you just briefly, so political considerations do play a role in the selection of judges. I mean, could you just walk us through a little bit, sort of how many judges are there, how long their terms are,
absolutely,
and what are the drivers? How are they selected?
Absolutely. We have two senates at the Federal Constitutional Court. Each senate is composed of 8 judges. That's an interesting composition because it's an even number, and you wonder how do you get a majority if it's 8. The very idea behind that is if it's a 4-4 decision, there it's in doubt, it's constitutional. So the founders of the Constitution wanted to have a very clear majority. If something is said to be unconstitutional, it at least needs to be 5-3. Mm-hmm. And the election of the judges is regulated on the constitutional plane and in a separate law. It's a very difficult procedure, but I think what is very important also for an international audience, we have a kind of informal agreement to guarantee the pluralistic composition of the court. And that agreement says that the Conservative Party, the CDU-CSU, can suggest three judges and per Senate, and that the Social Democrats can also suggest three judges for each Senate, and then the Liberals and the Green Party have one judge that they can suggest. So that's an agreement between the political parties, which has been, you know, in the past harshly criticized. There's lots of debates going on in Germany about that, and we were thinking whether we should change it, should follow maybe the American model with public hearings and public elections and so on. But, you know, by and large, the model proved to be very successful, that we have a really balanced court where, you know, we have rather, you know, center-left and center-right judges, and the composition is quite fine. And so even though it looks like a bit a deal between the political parties, which not even resembles today's majorities anymore, because the Social Democrats are not as strong as they used to be when the deal was negotiated, it still is a quite strong guarantee of a pluralistic composition of the court, and therefore there is not a big debate going on in Germany to change that.
And one other thing definitely worth mentioning at this point, Marcus, is of course that terms that judges are selected for. So you have these 16 judges, two Senates, each of eight, and that the terms that they are selected for is a single 12-year term, and
Absolutely.
They cannot be re-elected. So it's not a life
Absolutely.
Situation like in the Supreme Court, but it's a long but single term.
It's a long single term, and there is a very clear decision, no re-election to guarantee their political independence, yeah. No lifetime position, because that can also be very difficult and can lead at the end of the day to kind of, you know, political games. Therefore, it's 12 years. And if a judge turns older than 68 in the course of this term, the judge has to retire at the age of 68,
yeah.
Even if she or he is only 11 years serving, something like that.
And last thing to mention, they need to have they get nominated in this process that you described, but they still need to have 2/3 majority in the Bundestag, so a vote in the parliament supporting them. And this is supposed to, of course, if you need, you know, 2/3 majority is a high hurdle, which should mean that, you know, major political disagreements are kind of overcome by that, right? But I now want to turn it around to the candidate at the center of this, yeah, because it's one candidate, as Nina described us earlier. The Conservatives got cold feet about one candidate that they had ostensibly already signed up for in this earlier process. Her name is Frauke Borsius-Gersdorf. Michaela, tell us a little bit, who is Frauke Borsius-Gersdorf and why have the Conservatives got cold feet about her?
2 weeks ago, nobody really knew who Frauke Borsius-Gersdorf is, except fellow lawyers.
And Marco or something.
Yes, except fellow lawyers. Yeah. Now we're all talking about yeah. her. She is a reputable lawyer who considers herself to be within the center of the spectrum when it comes to fundamental rights in Germany, and most importantly, on the whole debate about the right to life, about abortion. And here she has written extensively on the whole question of whether you can weigh up the right to life and when human dignity kicks in as a fundamental right with the unborn child. And this has raised a huge debate now. And the whole question of selecting judges, which never used to be a political spectator sport here in Germany, has now become about a war of values within the conservative CDU-CSU party, which is the party that's in the lead in the current coalition. So this has really put her into a very difficult position. She went on national TV this week to map out that what is portrayed as her personal convictions actually is part of her argument and counter-argument, essentially her intellectual and scientific work as
okay.
a lawyer.
So, well, let's get into this. Because so in this interview that she did on German television this week, she came out and essentially explained how she's become the target of a massive kind of campaign on social media, a lot of hatred aimed towards her.
I have been called, among other things, ultra-left, radical-left, even left-wing extremist. And what I find particularly disturbing is that last weekend, the Archbishop of Bamberg referred to me personally as an abyss of intolerance and contempt for humanity. I have to be honest, I can no longer put up with that. I find it outrageous.
She confirmed to the host that she has been the victim of personal death threats delivered by email. And so, I mean, this has become, she's become the focus of an intense kind of culture war type fight. And a lot of this centers around, like you describe, the issue of abortion. So can you just explain what is the position that she has on abortion that is being focused on in this kind of social media fight going on?
More important than the position itself is the fact that the German church got involved, and which makes it impossible for the conservative CDU party to simply wave through this candidate, because the C stands for Christian in the name. So as soon as the church criticized her stance, where she argues that the Article 1, the right to human dignity, which is an absolute right and cannot be weighed up against any other right, according to the German constitution, that doesn't count for day one of conception. As soon as that, but the position of the church is different, and there is a compromise in German law that took decades really to negotiate, which doesn't see a decriminalization of abortion up to week 12.
Okay, we have to rewind here, because now we have to explain that abortion is, in legal terms, not legal in Germany.
Exactly.
But
you
it
don't
is,
get punished.
It's kind of tolerated.
There's just no yeah. punishment.
Yeah.
And in that's the first 12
that's
weeks.
That's a very painful compromise that was struck here that the church can live with.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way.
Can we talk about the Catholic Church? Because, you know, it's important to remember that
yes.
the Protestant
Church. The Protestant Church, on the other hand, really was a lot more low-key about this and said it usually does not comment on the selection of judges and really pretty much stayed out of it. But this is particularly the Catholic Church, and this crossed a red line for several MPs, and it was a significant number, what I'm hearing from inside the Conservative camp, that felt that a red line had been crossed in terms of the position, and essentially this has made her an impossible candidate to vote for.
Okay, I want to go back to Markus for the legal thing here, because so Frauke Borsius-Gerstorf, can we just explain her position? So we're talking about, she's been discussing, Markus, or she has said in the past, she said something about, as Michele said, referring to at what point does the dignity, the protections that the Constitution offers to the dignity of the individual, when do they kick in? Do they kick in at conception or do they kick in at birth? So this goes to the heart of the abortion debate, because at what point is there the protection of the unborn child? Markus, could you explain her position from a legal point of view?
Absolutely. I try my best, and the situation is even more complex, because Frauke Borsius-Gerstorf would not deny that as of the first day of conception, the right to life of the child is protected. So Article 2, Section 2 of our Constitution, guaranteeing the right to life, and this is one of the most important fundamental rights, this is also a right granted to the child. And she argues if we focus on that right, it would be a very strong position for the unborn child, whose life, of course, needs to be respected, but it would be easier to apply that weighing approach that you also could take into account, and more strongly so, the interests and rights of the woman. This is actually also some kind of, you know, dogmatic debate going on in Germany for quite a while. You already mentioned that compromise, which from a legal perspective is a bit strange thing, that a woman who does an abortion acts illegal is not justified, but she is not punishable because given the situation, there is no guilt. This is legally a kind of, you know, a strange compromise. And there has been, I think there have been libraries written about that. But at the end of the day, it proved to be a very smart move of our constitutional court, because it could silence the debate and more or less everyone could live with it. It's the conservatives who can live with it. It's the more progressive part of Germany. And we also should remember that that kind of, you know, new approach has been introduced after the reunification, kind of, you know, also receiving the former law of the former GDR, because in the old times of the Federal Republic of Germany, abortion was even regulated more restrictively, and there was no way in the first 12 weeks to do legally an abortion if there was not a specific indication. So we had that kind of, you know, indication solution that was even more kind of, you know, restrictive before. And there is now, I think, since a couple of years going on, also driven, of course, by political parties and political actors, a debate whether we should go on to further liberalize the abortion law. And within that debate, you know, Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf took a strong position, but within definitely the framework of what constitutional lawyers in Germany would debate and discuss how to overcome that kind of, you know, theoretical contradictions with that non-weighing of human dignity and nevertheless taking into account the position, the rights, and also the social pressure, the psychological pressure on a woman who is pregnant, but for whatever reason sees herself not in the position to raise the child.
Yeah. So Nina, so, I mean, what we're seeing here is that this kind of weird kind of grey zone compromise around the issue of abortion, which can be so politically incendiary in, say, the United States, where it's one of the, obviously, the livest kind of political and emotive issues, is kind of bubbling up to the surface. And Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf seems to kind of, she represents that bubbling to the surface.
It bubbles up every couple of years, I would say. Precisely what Markus just said. Described is something that keeps the German debate going regularly because it is a dilemma. It doesn't really make any sense, but it sort of is the least bad solution that most people can live with. But it is a legal dilemma. And Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf says, okay, let's just look at what is really happening here and legally, why, if we're saying, you know, it's illegal, but you don't get punished. Why don't we just say, you know, this could also be justified to say in the first 12 weeks, it is going to be legal to have an abortion. And interestingly enough, these anti-abortion people also here in Germany, they're calling her a radical person. But Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf, with this position, has 3/4 of the German population behind her. Mm. That's what polls are saying. It's not a radical position at all. And if I can add another thought on this, we're all now focusing on that abortion position that that she took. But really, the debate about her, what's interesting, there's an organization here in Berlin called Polysphere that looked into the search terms on the internet connected with her name from when it became clear that she was possibly going to become a judge at the Constitutional Court. The first search terms were AfD ban and vaccination. Mm. And so these two positions are, of course, very unpopular, and maybe Markus can explain her positions there, I don't know, but they are the ones that essentially got people from the far right interested, shall I say, in her character, in her person. But they realised that these two issues didn't really have a potential to mobilise others.
Yeah.
So abortion was picked up.
Yeah. So, okay, over to you, Markus. It sounds like so Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf, her track record on these questions of can you ban the far-right AfD party and the whole issue of can a vaccine in a pandemic such as COVID be made compulsory by the government?
Absolutely. I think these are the two positions or two points which for the extreme right are very difficult. I think the first point, vaccination during a pandemic, whether it can be obligatory or not, there's been quite a lot of debates going on amongst German constitutional lawyers also. And that's not a radical position to argue it can be obligatory. It's not a radical position to say it cannot be obligatory, because this is weighing kind of, you know, very different human rights interests. She took a stance, as many any other state. But of course, this is a stance which right-wing parties don't like. And if you are a right-wing party and you want to scandalize everything that can be scandalized, you go for everything which is out there. And this is a very welcome target, so to speak. Even though nowadays there is no big public debate and nobody would have focused on her writings if she would not have been elected as the candidate. I think more controversial and more problematic is the question whether the AfD, whether a right-wing party can be banned according to Article 1 of our Constitution. There is an ongoing debate because in Germany, this is a very important point, only the Constitutional Court could decide on the question whether a party is unconstitutional, therefore could be banned. And there is a clear interest of the right-wing AfD that judges who are newly elected to the Federal Constitutional Court and who would then have to decide on that question if there will be a complaint, which is still a very open question. And therefore, they, of course, are not very happy about a judge, potential future judge, which so far has been outspoken saying, I could see that that would happen, which does not say that it really would happen because the criteria are extremely high. The Social Democrats have that, you know, decision at their last party meeting that they will now evaluate whether it's possible or not. But this is really a very open question taking a long time. And the hurdles are really extremely high. There is not only the Federal Constitutional Court, there's also the European Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg who would control that. Therefore, that would be a very lengthy procedure. And political actors in Germany are very well aware they need to be very careful because if that goes wrong, it kind of, you know, would put the right wings in that kind of victim position that it would rather help them and they would, of course, get quite a lot of public attention. So that's the tricky thing.
Great. So we've got these three issues where Frauke Borsius-Gersdorf's opinions are uncomfortable either for the mainstream conservatives or for the far right, the issues of abortion, the issue of whether the AfD could be banned, and the issue of whether in a pandemic situation a vaccine can be made compulsory. Now let's bring all of this back into what happened in Parliament. So you have these questions that are riling up the conservatives and riling up the far right. On the last day parliamentary session, the conservatives said, right, we're not going to hold this vote. Like, let's go back to that moment, Michaela. Tell us what happened and who were the central players in that.
Hi, I'm Kate Laycock, host of DW's weekly European Current Affairs programme, Inside Europe. Our correspondents were there when the Berlin Wall fell, when the Balkans Wars broke out, and when Britain voted to leave the European Union. Now the continent is changing again, and we're rising to the challenge, bringing you a combination of expert analysis and on-the-ground reporting. Join us every Thursday.
Well, Jens Spahn is the chief whip. I think it's quite a fitting to use the British term for that because he basically didn't get the majority together.
So the chief whip for the Conservatives. So if you're thinking House of Cards, he's the Frank Underwood who's supposed to crack the whip and get
the
votes.
That's what he thinks. Well, it was his job to get to secure those votes. And this didn't all happen on Friday morning. There were signs and he was aware that there was a criticism of her, and there was also a scene before in Parliament where we saw Friedrich Merz firmly stand behind Frauke Borsius-Gersdorf.
So the Chancellor saying, I'm for her.
Yeah. Absolutely, because after all, and I just want to remind everybody, the majority was already there in the committee that is responsible for selecting these judges, and all parties in Parliament were in that committee, and there she had received the two-thirds majority required.
But there was one person from the Conservatives who didn't vote for her then, and that should have been a warning sign. It is confirmed that the left-wing member of that committee voted in favour of her. And that means, if you count the numbers, that one of the five Conservative representatives didn't vote.
So essentially, because these are secret votes.
So, yes. But essentially,
we don't know the exact names, but this was doing the maths. This is what we can backtrack.
So basically, so the top brass of both parties, the Conservatives and the Social Democrats, they thought, OK, we've got a deal. We've got the majorities. Let's put it to the vote of Parliament. And then there was this wobble.
Exactly. And the question that the chief whip of the Conservative camp now faces is, did he fail to do his homework, or why did he not see this coming? I know, having spoken to people who are involved in this process, that leading up to this Friday, where the emergency brake was pulled, there were dozens of talks with individual MPs. The call started coming in, we have doubts about this candidate, we don't want her. And this was after she was already confirmed in the committee that is supposed to confirm her. And this is when Jens Spahn, the Conservative chief, went into disaster mode, trying to round up those votes. Then in the night, on the night of Thursday, there was also a very public accusation, which was since withdrawn, that allegedly Frau Kaposius-Gerstorff was involved in plagiarism, that parts of what she had written was too similar to what her husband had written.
So this is in her academic career that she had...
Exactly. Yeah. So there was...
In Germany, that is the fatal mistake.
This
that
has
you
ended
make
political
to ruin
careers
your career. Yeah.
In the past. And although it was withdrawn, it stuck, and it gave those MPs who really were uncomfortable an excuse to say, listen, we have to pull the brakes here. We're not willing to vote for her today because we need to clear this up.
Okay.
So a complete disaster on Friday morning.
I would just like to add that it didn't need those conversations even with members of the parliamentary group. There were thousands of emails that were being sent in the weeks leading up to this potential vote, calling for members of the parliament from the Conservative parliamentary group not to vote for her. So it was very much out in the open. It was not a secret that there were big, big doubts, you know, at the basis, grassroots.
And I want to pull this back to, because, okay, there's the Conservative side. Mm. I want to pull it back to the party that you cover most closely, Nina, the Social Democrats, the centre-left. Frau Kaposius-Gerstorff, the nominee, she was their nominee. They had put her forward. They said, we want her on the court. They thought they had a deal with the Conservatives. Then the Conservatives get cold feet. Now, like, top figures in the party are saying they're furious. Yeah. So what's the mood, and what's this sense of, we thought we had a deal and we're getting screwed over?
The Social Democrats are very aware that this is not a love marriage with the Conservatives, and they've had to bite. They've had to really swallow a couple of difficult things for them in order to keep this government coalition functioning. They will vote together with the Conservatives on positions where they say this is really, they are sometimes in tears, but they have to vote on certain positions to change laws to keep the government in a stable position. So they feel they've made a lot of sacrifices in the past. For example, when it comes to the issue of refugees and which rights to grant people who have relatives abroad, can they come to Germany as well or not? The Conservatives have made it clear, no. So the Social Democrats said, all right, we're going to vote with you, and had a really swallow. And now they're saying, we got your okay. You know, this was a person that was confirmed. We had her in the committee. The majority was there. And then Jens Spahn agreed with the Social Democrats' chief whip to not have a hearing in Parliament of these three candidates and just say, OK, yeah. No, that these are our three people.
Well, they stuck with standard procedure, let's put it that
Which
way.
Which is standard procedure, exactly. And then so they were completely caught by surprise. And they're saying this is a reputable woman who has a very solid career, who in some positions, interestingly, that nobody talks about, and I'm sure that Marcus can confirm that, she's very much conservative rather than Social Democrat when it comes to social security systems, etc. There are a couple of positions where the SPD say, well, there's not really what we stand for, but they argue we're not voting for a politician on the Constitutional Court. We want a legal expert, and we believe that this person is somebody who can redefine her role as well as a legal scientist. Of course, she picks up debates that are happening and she finds a legal position on them. But we trust her expertise enough that we think once she is judge, then she will find herself in that role.
Okay.
And they feel that it's something that is outrageous for conservative politicians to now say, well, you know, there's a risk of damaging democratic institutions, so maybe you should consider withdrawing your candidacy.
Yeah. So essentially the Social Democrats saying, we're carrying the can for you conservatives on a lot of things. You have to carry the can for us on this. But I want to bring it back to the conservatives for a moment, Michele, because we've been talking about this figure, Jens Spahn, the chief whip. So it looks like, you know, he maybe doesn't have his troops, you know, kind of completely in tow. But what about Friedrich Merz, the chancellor? I mean, he had spoken, he said he was in favor of this judge. Now this is all unraveled. It looks like he doesn't have his troops under control.
Well, Friedrich Merz here in Germany faces the accusation that he spent too much time abroad in his first 10 weeks. Of course, he went to visit Donald Trump. There was a NATO summit. There was a G7 summit.
We've covered
summit.
All of that.
We've covered all that. Look at the previous episodes. Mm. And he clearly was relying on people like Jens Spahn to keep the conservative house in order. And here's the damage assessment for them. They were caught out not having their own troops lined up. They simply didn't have the votes. That's damage to Jens Spahn. The chancellor himself appeared on Friday morning before his own parliamentary group. That didn't suffice to sway those votes needed. So it damages his standing within his own parliamentary group.
And this is the second time something like this has happened. I mean, even when he was elected chancellor, which happened in the Bundestag, also on earlier episodes we talked about that, he failed the first vote. Yeah, he's got an issue with his troops, does he? Is this what we're seeing here?
Yes, and it's a two-way issue, really, because when he was elected chancellor, and this was actually one of the most spectacular days in German politics in many years, many MPs didn't understand that you can't just have a second round of voting. So clearly some people had a score to settle from within his own political camp, and they thought the damage would be limited if they don't vote for him in the first round. So there was a lack of understanding that this posed huge questions in terms of getting a second vote scheduled, which required huge exceptions. And in fact, it required the help of the left party. Okay, this is pretty bad for the Conservatives.
That the Conservatives
who
say
to cooperate with them.
Exactly. Yeah, they've got it in writing. We're not cooperating with them.
Yes. So this it makes him look weak. It makes him lose authority, actually, to the inside and the outside. And it damages the whole process, because I mentioned it earlier, I can't stress enough, the selection of judges is not a political spectator sport in Germany. There are no public hearings. There's no public dissection of these candidates. This is an absolute first in modern German history, that you would also see someone like Frau Kaposius-Gerstorf feel she needs to go and explain herself
on TV,
on national television. Yeah. And she then spoke of that particular Friday as a day where she just focused on getting through. She literally said surviving the day.
Yeah, I want to go back to Markus, because I want to start kind of pulling together some implications of this. I mean, Markus, the kind of your community of the law professors have been pretty much rallying around this candidate, Frau Kaposius-Gerstorf, and you were one of hundreds of people who signed a statement expressing your concern about everything that's happened. Tell us about what you were all saying, and what are the implications of what has been going on here for the Constitutional Court? Does this risk a kind of a slippery slope to greater politicization of the court?
I don't think so, at least not yet. So the court is still a very strong actor in Germany, a strong institution, a trusted institution. And I think, you know, the court is still functioning. So that's not a major crisis for the court. I think what, you know, law professors are concerned about is the kind of influence of media campaigns, of social media campaigns, how, you know, political actors from the right wing, maybe also in the future from the left wing, but at the moment we are focusing on the right wing, can within a couple of days, you know, completely surprise political actors and really try to split majorities, try to kind of, you know, poison political debates, because there is a clear tendency by the AfD, I'd be very outspoken here, that be very happy if the coalition fails, because then they believe that would be their hour and that would kind of increase their power. They would, you know, gain more votes. And this is the intention. And I think this is the major concern of law professors. We don't want to be political. We don't want to judge, and we don't want to play the blame game, because I think it was difficult times for all party actors in that situation. But we want, from an analytical perspective, make very clear and also tell the deputies in parliament, we might face that in the future. Whoever is a candidate, the political right-wing parties will try to scandalize. They will try to have that public debate. They will spam your email accounts with hundreds of emails, and they will try really to make you feel uncomfortable and uncertain and change your mind last minute. And I think this is absolutely, this is something we need to be very clear about. And this was one of the intentions of the law professors. And the other intention was, like, read carefully what a candidate has written. As you said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the name Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf was known to a inside community of lawyers, of, you know, in particular constitutional lawyers. Her writings were not read. Nobody knew what she had written. And now there is a pick and choose of some quotes from her writings that are scandalized. And this is, for me, I think, as a society, we should learn that we not fall into that trap of that kind of, you know, typical right-wing narratives. There is the big scandal and there is the horrific story, that we start to read carefully, that the media try to help people also to better understand the full complex picture. And therefore, you know, even though it might not have been the smartest move that Frauke Brosius-Gersdorf went to public TV, I think that makes the situation for her rather more difficult. I personally can very well understand why she did so, because if you're accused, you know, you want to defend yourself also in public. And I think this is the big concern. And that was the reason for me to sign the letter and for so many other colleagues, to rationalize the procedure and to have a clear warning to the liberal democratic parties in the center of our liberal democracy. Do not kind of, you know, be kind of, you know, threatened by these right-wing narratives. Take a stand, and really, really try to defend liberal democracy and try to strengthen the resilience of liberal democracy.
And looking at the role of the far right, of the AFD, Marcus, I mean, do you think part of potentially a problem here is that this nomination process involves this kind of agreement, sort of gentleman's agreement, between the older parties, between the Conservatives, between the Social Democrats, and also the Liberals and the Greens, where, as we heard earlier, they each have, you know, a certain number of judges that they can nominate, that from the AFD's perspective, this looks like a kind of a stitch-up between the establishment. From where you're sitting, Marcus, do you see that as an issue that the political world is going to have to address, or would you prefer the far right just to kind of stay out of this situation? Because the reality is, they're the biggest opposition party in Parliament. I mean, they have a voice and they are elected by millions of people.
Absolutely. That's the problem with that kind of deal. And of course, that's a very strong argument on the side of the AfD. On the other side, we need to be very outspoken on the fact that, you know, they are really, and official also statements by, you know, political actors in Germany, that they are right-wing extremists, and we need to be very careful. I think that's an extremely tricky situation, which brings us back to the debate whether the party could be banned from, you know, sitting in parliament or not. I think so far it is a wise decision, and it's an agreement between all political parties in the political middle. And if we play with numbers, you know, of course the right wings now, if they have 20%, which is a stronger position in parliament, but the big majority of the voters, you know, voting for the Green Party, for the Liberals, for the left, for the left wings, for the Christian Democrats, for the Christian Social Democrats, and so on. I think there is still a very strong, also popular support for these parties, so that I would not see a real democratic problem at the moment. Of course, the AfD would like to make that argument strong. We are excluded, and the traditional parties, they don't play with us and they ignore the will of the people. However, I think we also should be very critical about the positions, the outspoken positions, the statements they make. And we should, if we talk about majorities, if we talk about numbers of votes, make the strong argument that the political center is still the strongest voice in Germany. So I do not have a serious problem with the fact that that political center is also represented in our pluralistic constitutional court.
You have this establishment debate, and I think that is a very strong argument the AfD has, that it, as the second largest or the strongest the opposition party, it feels it's not represented accordingly. At the same time, you have a candidate who was blocked or is now currently being blocked from even facing a vote in parliament because there's this cloud of doubt over plagiarism over her. Well, there's also a cloud of doubt hanging above the AfD, which in parts is suspected of having the aim of undermining the constitutional order. And of course, that raises the question, until that doubt is either removed or the any of the Verfassungsorgane, any of the constitutional parts of Germany, like the Bundestag, or the government decides whether they want to have the constitutional court check the very intentions of the AfD and whether there is a basis to ban the AfD. As long as this doubt is there, it does raise the question whether this party should be allowed to take part in this process of convention that leads to being able to put a judge, it's not even putting a judge, suggest a candidate to join the constitutional court. And it shows that we're at this point of tension here in Germany where there is a need to move in either direction. And we'll be following this very closely, where this debate goes on and whether anyone musters the courage to face this head on and to go either way.
But we need to wrap this up.
Yeah.
We're running out of time. But yeah, AfD very much a central part of this. Of course, nobody is questioning the right of the AfD to vote in that ultimate vote in the Bundestag.
No.
What we're talking about here is the process of nomination.
I know, but I really need to mention something, that the AfD just earlier this month published a strategy paper where you can read their strategy is to divide the Conservatives and the Social Democrats and to mobilize people to polarize debates here in this country. It's black and white.
Yeah, and of course. I mean, the AfD have an interest, obviously, in undermining the existing government. I mean, they would say that is the role of
it's just
an opposition
so that,
party.
Yeah? You know, sometimes we come across as doing fear mongering or something. We're here to analyze what is happening on the ground. We're not making this up. This is something that the AfD itself has published, which is why I needed to add it.
So what just happened is part of their own strategy, which they put down in black and white.
Yeah.
How's this going to end, Nina?
I'm waiting for them to attack the second woman. You know, we've talked about one woman out of those three candidates that were suggested, and I can already see on social media that they're now beginning to focus on the other one.
But let's bring it back to the candidate we've been talking about, Volker Borsius-Gersdorf. The Conservatives are kind of hoping that the Social Democrats will withdraw her and nominate somebody else, or that she will withdraw herself. Nina, from what you can see from the Social Democrats, do you anticipate that happening, or the Social Democrats going to stand on principle and say, no, our candidate's good, we want her?
I think it's up to Frau Borsius-Gersdorf. And watching her on national TV, I got the feeling that she's applying her own scientific method to this decision as well. Not just to legal issues, but to the question, am I potentially going to be a risk to one of our most crucial democratic institutions, yes or no? Would it help democracy in this country if I withdrew? Yes or no? She's currently weighing this up, and the SPD are certainly not going to push her or ask her to withdraw. I think they're going to make it her decision.
And for the Conservatives, do you think, I mean, is there any chance that they would come around and say, all right, we'll vote for her after all, or is this over for them?
No, there isn't. Alexander Hoffmann, the of the Bavarian CSU sister parties, the chief whip there, already said that he doesn't expect this lineup of candidates to go ahead. At the same time, we're seeing the Social Democrats doubling down. So this is a full-on clash in terms of this candidacy. I don't believe that Frau Kaprosius-Gerstorf has the kind of leverage that you are saying she has. I think she lost leverage by going on public television, and that this is solely up in the end to the chancellor, the vice chancellor, and their party whips to work out a compromise, which will then transpire publicly.
And I mean, they have, as the leaders of this government, that to bring it back to where we started, they came in saying we're going to be the government that gets things done, that doesn't have infighting. They have a huge self-interest in sorting this out, right?
They do, and this is why it surprised me, but this just shows how deep the divisions are within the Conservative camp, that Friedrich Merz is stressing that essentially we have all the time in the world. We don't. Mm-hmm. Time is pressing. One of the terms of these judges that need to be replaced has already run out. Another one is running out in June. This is all still manageable, but it just needs to be resolved. And the longer this festers, the more aspects you can have to what essentially is a political mess. Until that Friday morning, very few people in Germany were aware that this vote was even taking place. And now this is the summer debate of a weakness of a coalition that came in promising to project strength.
Absolutely. And the big risk is for this to drag on for so long that Bundesrat also gets the right.
That's the upper house of parliament.
The upper house of parliament that represents the regions in this country to suggest candidates. And that would be such a loss of face for the current government coalition. If that went to the other chamber of parliament.
I want to take it back to Marcus for a last word to our legal representative here. Obviously, you spoke out supportively of Frau Kaprosius-Gerstorf, so you have a bit of a stake in this. But I just want you to stand back from that, Marcus, and think about, you know, what would you do in her shoes? And I want to stress, I don't mean that I want you to give her advice. I want to really, you know, put yourself in this position. You've been nominated for this role. You've been dragged through this situation. You've gone on television. You've become a national figure in almost the worst possible way. What do you do at that stage? Are you capable of then going into the Constitutional Court and then fulfilling that role? Or has this, the very fact of this tumult made that impossible at this stage?
A tricky question. I'm not in the position to give advice. I personally would, I think, make a clear public statement and then withdraw, because I think it would be very difficult to really fulfill the task in the future. There would be a kind of public attention which is not helpful. And even though she doesn't deserve it, I think it might be the smartest move. But this is not advice. This is my personal point. I wouldn't go running. And I think at the end of the day, as you make clear, she might not have the leverage really to fight until the end. But time will tell. If I was in the position, even though it's a procedure which is unfair, I would make quite clear statement. I would withdraw, but I would hope that all the turmoil really got also public attention, not only on these questions, on the person of Frau Kaprosius-Gerstorf, but also that we have a debate, and not only a summer debate, about how, you know, in a liberal democracy, debates can be done, decisions can be made, that we have really open political debates, helpful and constructive ones, and that we, at the end of the day, as a society, not get trapped by the kind of, you know, narratives of right-wing parties that want to scandalize and that want to emotionalize debates that should be rationalized and that should be open and that really should celebrate the diversity of a pluralistic society.
Oh, ending on an optimistic note. So, Marcus, thank you so much.
So, yeah, thanks, everyone. I mean, I've definitely learned a lot. I think this is one of our longer episodes, but I think a real kind of snapshot into the zeitgeist here in Germany right now, and with a lot of potential.
And not just in Germany.
Yeah, and also with parallels everywhere. Markus Kurzer in Hamburg, thank you very much for being our first law professor on Berlin Briefing. It's been a pleasure to have you here. Nina, Michaela as well. And of course, thank you for watching on YouTube, for listening on any podcast provider. Do, of course, please subscribe, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere you are. That would be great. Also, give us a rating. That would also help our podcast visibility. Write us a comment on YouTube if you're on the platform there. We always like checking those out and taking inspiration for future episodes. And do sign up if you haven't yet for our weekly newsletter, Berlin Briefing, a great roundup of what's going on here in Germany. But for now, from all of us here, bye-bye.